Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Cybernetics. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey, everybody.
Hello, woo-hoo! My geeklings.
Hello.
Welcome to another episode of Geeks On.
How exciting.
It's been so long.
Yes, it's during a very busy time for some of us, so it's just damn lucky that we're here at all.
Consider yourselves blessed by our largesse.
Aaron, you're doing upfronts right now, right?
CBS upfronts. I'm in the middle of that, so all the pilots are rolling in, and then they'll be picking shows here soon, and then... my work will be done in about 2 or 3 weeks. So
anything that we should look forward to that you can talk about?
Nothing that I can talk about. There's lots of shows that CBS has announced, pilots that have come in, but we get a whole bunch of them and then they whittle it down, and I don't even know which ones they're eyeing right now. The big wigs mull it over and they decide what time slot different things would work in, and then they spring it on the world in the middle of May. So in the middle of May, you will hear from all the networks what new shows will be out. In fact, they usually release trailers into the media right after that. So you'll see what new shows everybody is will have for the fall.
Awesome. Fun. Is there anything geeky
yes.
In the pocket?
Yeah.
There are. Okay. Good.
Yes. There is geek in the works. But who knows? I mean, I don't know if they're gonna what shows they'll pick. But
why don't we take a second to introduce ourselves?
Okay.
All right. Excellent.
My name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer, and I'm a geek here in Los Angeles.
My name is Matt King. I'm an actor and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I am also a geek.
My name is Donald Marshall. I'm a video game professional here in sunny Hollywood, and I too am a geek.
My name is Juan Carlos Bagnell. I am a commercial casting director and senior editor of YourTechReport.com, and I am totally a geek.
Yes, yes, yes,
one
he is.
Us. One of us.
Welcome, Google Gobble, welcome. Google Gobble.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Hey, by the way, I have you ever seen She Freaks?
No.
Of course.
She Freaks is essentially a remake of Freaks done in the 60s. But they did it with kind of like go-go dancers. It was kind of one of those drive-in movie, flicks where they were just trying to pit, girls and tassels would dance. But they did it to the same, it's the same storyline as Freaks. The filmmaker, though, didn't have a lot of money. He had previously went out and just shot some random footage of a circus being, circus tents being built and put up. And
right.
And he used, there's literally like a 20-minute scene of just this footage of stakes being pounded in the ground and tents being put up just to kind of pad the movie to be an hour and a half.
I'm just picturing the editing room with some director in the background going, "Keep padding!"
No, I just pulled it up. Like, anyone who's listening to this podcast, you've got to look up at least the poster art for this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It says 2.5 on IMDb right now. That's hysterical.
I think I had actually bought it when I was younger because it was just such a weird, crazy movie. But
hey, well, you like Zardoz.
Well, but anything that's Freaks derivative, that's,
right?
You've got to like, because Freaks is amazing. You've got to like follow anything that's even ripping it off.
But and that's the biggest disappointment is that there are no real Freaks in this version. It's just makeup and.
Oh no! I have to get this now.
It's faux Freaks.
I'm sure you can find it streaming somewhere. Check Netflix for She Freaks. Hey, I have a question before we get started. If you guys could only, we were talking about this at work. If you guys could only play one game for the rest of your life, whether it's a board game, a role-playing game, or a video game, what would you choose? And then would you pick a specific one?
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. Good gravy.
Board game, role-playing game or video game.
So if you're asking if it's like a board game or role-playing game, that means I can play with other people, right?
You can play with other people. It's not like you're stuck on an island. You can just, but you can only play one game.
Wow.
Well, I think it has to go over to RPG, like pen and paper then.
That's what I thought, because it's more, I would pick some type of generic one where I could like change it up and be more flexible, but I would definitely pick a role-playing game.
I was immediately thinking like how wide I could get it. I was like, I was going, if it was a video game, it'd probably have to be World of Warcraft or something like that, that at least would allow, you know, viability or micro games or mini games within.
I'm gonna have to go with my gut though. And like the first thing that popped in my head was RTS. So like, I don't know, maybe I'd be stuck with Command and Conquer or something like
for
that.
For the rest of your life.
I do remember.
Are you Korean?
I do remember reading about somebody who just finished up a 25-year game of Civilization.
When he just kept doing one more turn.
Yeah, he just kept doing one more turn. It was fairly epic. I think that's safe to say.
I guess so. Yeah, I think I would do a role-playing game, and I think it would pick like a generic one. And at that point, I don't think it would really matter if it was GURPS or what's that new one with all the...
could not be GURPS. I think I still would shoot myself in the head.
Would it be the generic universal role-playing game? Yeah, exactly.
It's got enough books that I could just keep reading forever.
Exactly, forever. Absolutely, forever and ever and ever.
All right, I just
They're making a cyberpunk video game, and I'm terribly, terribly excited.
I Another know.
One? Yeah, no... Well, Mike Pondsmith is actually is heading up a new a cyberpunk video game.
And
it was just a big arena shoot 'em up.
That was Shadowrun.
Oh, that Shadowrun. Was Shadowrun, right?
No, this is like a legit role playing game. I think is what he's doing, which is cool.
Really,
I'm really excited. It looks pretty. I don't know. It looks like Deus Ex without being sort of locked down into the Deus Ex-ness of Deus Ex.
That was pretty meta, dude.
I kind of want that 80s '80s cyberpunk gloss to it.
That's
you know?
What that's it is.
That's exactly what it had.
Yeah. Sort of like it wouldn't William be Gibson it without board.
Yeah. It was neat. So I'm hopeful. So.
Well, then are you guys getting stoked for Destiny then?
Destiny.
That's a new Bungie game. Well, I don't think I know enough about it.
Well, because their vibe there is like it sounds like they're trying to borrow elements of, you know, massive online role playing games, and they're talking about this sort of like 10-year vision for what the game mechanic is going to be as you sort of start holding your own territories. And it sounds really ambitious, but I'll be curious to see how well it's executed.
Well, here's
That's
the deal.
That's the clinch, yeah.
I mean, here's the deal. Sony did PlayStation 4 recently semi-announced.
They didn't show us the box.
Well, no, I kind of knew that was going to happen. They can't show too much because Microsoft then will have like a little bit of head start.
Right, an edge.
But then Microsoft will be, you know, probably doing the same thing here May 20th, I think. But essentially, they need to start talking about how games are going to be different, because I don't know about you, but we've talked about this before a little bit. I put in Skyrim and I'm fine with graphics. I'm not pining away for, you know, better, smoother water and all that. I mean, that would be amazing. But
no, what I'm interested in, and maybe we can take this later on in the actual topic tangentially, is I feel like there's a sort of augmented reality part of this that has potential for growth.
Maybe we can talk about the Oculus and I don't know, but things like new ways of playing games, like, you know, if Bungie really is going to tell us, no, this is a new way of playing, it's an online continuous story that, you know, that's a first person MMOE type of thing. If they're going to, that's what I'm waiting for someone to show.
Nobody's come up with the MMO yet where you can really play with your friends and somebody could GM and really use the toolbox of a game.
Well, Neverwinter Nights did that.
They've been too unwieldy at this point.
Exactly. Neverwinter Nights did do that and it was unwieldy. That's exactly right.
Well, you had to be, I mean, in order to make it cool, you had to be a badass.
Broke
with.
You had to be like a programmer to like be able to do it. It was, I mean, I respect what they were doing, but, you know, no, not yet.
Not yet.
So how was everybody's Geek Week?
Hey, can we, I guess this is going to be the best time to put it in, the slot to put it into, but I think I'm done with the sci-fi's new show, Oblivion.
Defiance.
I gave it 3 episodes and it's not good.
How was it? I haven't seen it at all. I haven't seen it at all. I'm with Matt.
I've got them on my TiVo right now and I still haven't had a chance to sit down and watch them.
I disagree.
It looks sort of like a bad Farscape to me, and that's saying something. So,
so you liked it, Don?
I don't love it, but I think right now it's still building a foundation.
I don't even know what the show's
about. Hold on. Let's put a sub note in here. We have to annotate this. Don watched the entire first season of Babylon 5, and makes everybody watch the first season of Babylon 5 with the caveat that, yes, I know this sucks, but it's totally worth it.
Yes. Oh, no. Yes. No, I will accept.
6 years from now, you'll appreciate this.
I will accept that brand. I will force your ass to sit through that schlock in order to get through the best damn series you will ever sit through.
There we go.
But, I mean, right now, we're 3 episodes in. I appreciate what they're doing right now. They're reapproaching the Western,
but that's the thing. Is it's an awful. There's nothing Western about it. In fact, the costumer needs to be hung from the rafters like Western style, because it's embarrassing to even look at.
Run him out of town on a rail.
Yeah, and I just don't get like sometimes you'll have a shot in a scene where everyone's dressed as cowboy clothes, and then you cut to another scene and it's like just a different. It's just not working for me.
It's a hodgepodge of Old West, of post-apocalyptic, you know, and occasionally some modern stuff shows up.
Set on Earth? I mean, what's the premise? Tell me about the premise.
The premise is that right about now, some ships from some arcs that are carrying the genetic material from several other civilizations show up here. And forcibly start terraforming our Earth without our permission.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be empty, and they show up, and they essentially just drop down these terraforming nodes that start just changing the terrain, changing life forms, and all that stuff.
And right now, the actual history of what happened is starting to unfold in the show. We don't really know. But we do know that there is a war with these 7 different alien species that show up on our Earth, some of which might have helped us, some of which were against us, and now there's this sort of alliance in this town where there's this uneasy truce with 6 different species, I think.
Interesting.
Living together, and there's a
like really shitty species. There's like Monkey Man, and then there's like Bump on the Forehead Girl, and then there's, you know, the big steroid guy. And,
see, I don't agree. I think that right now what we're looking at is special effects that are not entirely up to snuff. With I mean, the CGI is awful. I'm with Aaron on that. They had some alien beasties show up in the last episode where I was like, even I couldn't. I'm fairly forgiving. I love Doctor Who. But mother of God, these beasties that showed up were just embarrassing. But I think the makeup is actually quite attractive.
I think they do the makeup well. I do like the they have an alien race that's just pure ashen gray white.
It's beautiful,
and they look very cool.
Yeah, and I can see what they're doing already. Is in the early part of the series, they're exploring one alien species and their culture very deeply, and the other ones are peripheral at first. And they just started exploring a second alien species in this last episode. And so you're going to start getting these different cultures, and how they fit together are going to build the series.
But it sounds
that's going to hit Don in his Babylon 5 soft place.
I love my sociocultural sci-fi. That's
but
what
I
it's
just,
all about.
Like,
you
I
do.
Wish it was
Most
dead.
Certainly do.
I wish it was Deadwood type of quality, not
you
like
can't resent it for what it's not.
Well, but it also sounds like it sounds like outside of just the premise that we're still stuck in that early expository nature of trying just to get people introduced to the world.
Yeah,
you give it three episodes and come back and we'll have it. I'd be surprised if you can get through it.
You defy him to.
I defy you.
I defy.
But they did give a little nod to Star Trek in the last episode. The last episode was called "Devil in the Dark."
Oh, excellent!
For those old classic. Trek. Yes, yes. No kill. all right, so Don's going to give it more time. I'm going to maybe I'll let TiVo capture some more, and then Don, if you convince me later, I'll do like three or four hours in a row or something.
I will admit it definitely has more in common with other sci-fi shows than say Battlestar Galactica, which makes me sad.
It is right. No Battlestar Galactica.
No,
that
it is not.
Is for sure.
I will not is put it even, in that category.
Are we going to have it a Battlestar Galactica fight? I am totally down for a Battlestar Galactica fight.
No. I think we all like Battlestar.
We spent the first 10 episodes of this show trying to get Aaron to watch Battlestar Galactica.
That was actually the first episode of this show was trying to get Aaron to watch it.
Because I'll get cranky geek about the last half of the last season of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, come on. Well, they dropped. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But here, this is a typical human thing. And by the way, they actually have studied this, that humans tend to judge a situation or an item or a product or a memory on the last part of it. So you can get 6 years and be you can get 6 years of quality entertainment. The last three episodes you won't like, or even the last episode, and people will go, "That was crap."
Oh, no, I'll be the first one to say that the Pegasus storyline is some of the most amazing TV ever produced, and I would encourage everyone to go and watch it. I can also
first three seasons.
Say, yeah, the first three seasons are very, very solid. It's the fourth season where we start introducing very inconsistent characters.
Oh, I agree.
To a world that we had very well established up to that point, in an effort to circumvent answering questions that we were told were going to be answered.
I totally agree.
I mean, it did the same thing that Lost did.
Yep.
Where basically, people go, they get to a point where they write themselves into a corner, and then they go, "It's time to change the rules." And as soon as you do that, it degrades.
I think they also had problems with their trapdoors. You know, they had characters that were supposed to supply certain roles in the show. Those characters weren't able to continue their runs. And when those characters left, it robbed certain dramatic points that they were never able to recover from.
Very true.
You know,
I'd agree with that.
Well, I think, first of all, when it comes to Lost, I think Lost suffered from the fact that the networks wanted to run longer.
Oh, they milked the hell out of that show.
TV shows should last 4 or 5 years. Period. End every TV series at 5 years, and I guarantee you will get a better series altogether.
The Simpsons.
But I also think there was an issue with the sort of interruption of the writer's strike.
Yeah.
Then getting compounded by the sort of production work that a guy like Lindelof is sort of known for, sort of circumventing answering questions, you know, and so.
But also, yeah, exactly. I mean, I've watched. The thing about Lindelof is that I was always on the fence until now that I've seen more of his stuff that he's
for
done
outside
of this. For
people not in the know, Lindelof was one of the lead writers on Lost.
Yeah. And now that I've seen more of the stuff that he's done recently, I'm really like, yeah, okay.
I will defend – I like Lost.
Are you talking about Pandora?
Maybe.
Not Pandora. I'm talking about Prometheus.
Prometheus.
Prometheus, excuse me, yes. The ship.
I'll defend Lost. I thought Lost was about not having answers, and I never expected it. I did think that Lost just kind of, you know, did a slow downturn and just, you know, but most TV shows do that. I still think Lost, you know, was pretty good up until the end.
First three seasons.
I think Lost had a nice uptick when they actually finally gave it a death date.
Yeah, me too.
But I still think they got caught in that trap of it's emotionally satisfying, but you kept us on the hook for several seasons with this notion of mystery.
Yes.
So you wrapped an emotional character drama in the trappings of a mystery, and then denied us the intellectual satisfaction.
And they just dropped the ball on certain things, or it was just literally oh, right, we really like that episode, but, you know, you know, that guy, yeah, that character that we built up for seven episodes who is the foil for Benjamin Linus, yeah, he's really Illuminati, yeah, he's this guy's, he's a dad.
All right.
Thank you, Dad.
We're arguing about a show that's been dead for a while, so yeah, we should probably move on. All right. Do we have should we go to...
I just have to tell you this one thing. So this is my geek week. This is how I have to talk about this. So I did a job for something.
You're a hitman, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah. Well, kind of. I mean, you would think with this job. I have never been this intimidated by working for somebody before. They made my agent sign an NDA, a really strongly worded NDA, before he could tell me where the building was that I was going to.
That sounds like video game stuff.
It was crazy. No, video game stuff I've worked on before, and it's never been this nuts. Nothing I've worked on before has been this nuts. Then when I got there, they made me sign two NDAs, one for myself, one for my corporation, before I could walk in the door of the place. And then once I got in the door of the place, they took my phone away from me, and they put a sticker on it that covered up both cameras, and it had a QR code on it with a microchip that basically could track my phone all over the complex, no matter where I went. And then I finally got to the recording room, and they go, "You can't hear any of the spot. We're not allowed to tell you anything about it. But if you happen to hear it through the door, then, you know, that's just you happening to do that. Here, sign, and then please sign this last non-disclosure agreement."
Wow. Now you're going to tell us all about it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was
suckers.
I have never been this intimidated by a corporation. They were so, like, I feel like I needed satellite clearance by the
way. Are you allowed to tell us if it's feature or television or commercial?
Nothing.
EA games.
So you did the iPhone 5S, didn't you?
Nothing.
That's the new Siri.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> Be awesome, wouldn't it? Oh, man.
I had a an interesting audition this week for a project that I think people will get a kick out of. I went out on audition for a reality show, something I swore I would never do.
Nice. Shut the front door.
I went out on audition for The Quest.
Oh, you did this.
I did it. I said, fuck it. And I submitted, and they called me the next day. The Quest is a new reality show produced by the producers of The Amazing Race and the Lord of the Rings. So it's apparently a fusion of the two. That's all I know.
Wow.
So they haul a room of about 40 geeks together. And they stand us in front of each other.
What is that, a gaggle of geeks?
It is a gaggle of geeks, in fact. Yes. And they basically stand us up in front of each other, and they have us explain for a good 5 to 10 minutes each what being a geek means to us and how wonderful it is. And it was an interesting and uplifting experience. And it was very interesting, actually, because listening to everyone's sort of geeky story was a very sort of kumbaya experience. And it was very interesting. As I was leaving the building, there was three guys there who had started a geek fitness club that were like
the most empty gym on in the United States of America.
Well, yeah, they were like, no, there were three geeky guys who were like, "Well, you're getting really fat because we're role playing all the time." So we're like, "We like Klingon stuff and we have batliths." So we're like, "Fuck it, let's learn saber fencing." So they're getting together every week, learning saber fencing, and they lost like 30 pounds together.
Right, you know,
it was
like,
yeah, it was really freaking awesome. So it was like all stories like that, and it was really interesting stuff. So these people are going to be putting together a amazing race in Middle Earth.
I like it.
So keep an eye out for it. Should be fun.
That would be fantastic.
I know. I would watch it. I admit it.
I'd watch that show.
I actually got to asked to do the Amazing Race back when I first got to Los Angeles. Mindy and I got asked to do it, and I was like, "No, I can't." No, there's no actor that ever got off of a of a there was no actor that ever got offered of a CBS or whatever reality TV show at that point in time, so I bowed out. But I always wondered whether or not I could have won $1 million and just walked away.
Hmm.
Mm.
I mean, and really, how big could you have lived on $1 million? Like, after taxes, I mean, you would have had to come back anyway.
Yep.
Well, they
could have been the next Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's some good money right there.
All right. How about some geek news?
Why don't we do that?
Right. Let's do it.
Okay. Geek news.
Yeah,
has any of you guys seen Oblivion, by the way?
What do you mean? Oh, I really want to see it.
I heard it was good.
I absolutely don't.
I really liked it.
Really?
I did.
I really liked it better when it was called WALL-E.
Ooh.
Did you see the movie?
No, but right, I looked at it.
Does he save a bunch of fat people in the end?
I've never actually seen a fat person
in a Tom Cruise movie.
Well, first of all, if you looked at it, you couldn't say anything bad about it. It is beautiful, and it looks like it was, you know, designed by Johnny Ives or something. I mean, it's like a product designer's wet dream movie. That's one of the reasons why I went to go see it. I heard so many kind of ho-hum reviews about it, so I actually lowered. I was not expecting anything. But I really, in a summer of sequels and, you know, movies made out of toy, made from, you know, 80s toys and shit like that, I was like, okay, it's not the best. It's got flaws. I'm not saying this is a perfect movie, but it felt like a real science fiction movie. And it looked beautiful, and I thought it was pretty good. I think you guys should all see it.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I'm totally on board just for the fact that, one, it feels a little fresh just from some of the recent deluge of sequels and rehashes that we've had. And really, it doesn't take much for me to get on board a Tom Cruise film as long as there's a scene of him running at some point.
Yeah, he's got to run somewhere fast.
I'm pretty much cool, man. That's really all I need.
Have you seen
Has there ever been
video?
A Tom Cruise movie where he's not running?
No, yeah.
Cocktail.
No, absolutely. No, he runs in Cocktail. There's a YouTube video out right now that shows the progression of Tom Cruise's running.
Oh my God, that I gotta watch.
It's fantastic.
He becomes
so much of a better runner as he gets older. It's amazing.
Oh, they need to recast North by Northwest and have him be the.
Oh, absolutely.
With the plane chasing him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm just curious if they managed to fit in another homoerotic volleyball scene in this one.
Oh, right.
They did not in this one. But
I'm out.
Well, you'd be missing out. It could be Elysium might be the science fiction hit this summer, but I was satisfied.
Which one? The new Blomkamp film, Elysium, with Matt Damon?
Yeah.
I think that looks that has me so on board. It's unreal.
Oh, that movie already had my movie the second I heard about it.
Yeah. I mean, but I just love that he's using science fiction to do social commentary. I mean, one of the things I didn't realize until I saw the making of District 9 was he actually went out and filmed people in South Africa. Just talking about blacks in South Africa. And then he used those interviews as those people talking about the bugs.
Yeah, he had done that. He had done a short film where he had done that. He went and interviewed people. And he got all these really authentic, you know, people. And then he'd comp in the background a sign that said, you know, no bugs allowed and all this stuff. And you just assumed they were talking about the alien, you know, invasion. And it works. I mean, it looks amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. I wish we could, if you guys see it, I think we should do like a spoiler cast on Oblivion because there's a lot to talk about.
Well, I'm gonna catch it this weekend. That's my Saturday movie.
All right.
So. Okay, you're invited back.
All right.
Yeah, we'll do an all spoiler spoiler show where people just should not listen to it if they haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, I need something good. I think I've seen so few good things so far. Like I think I saw Oz last, and that was just hurt full of hurt.
Yes.
The last movie I saw was Evil Dead. Did you guys see Evil Dead?
No. What
did you think?
Well, it depends on what you like about the Evil Dead films. Because if you like the sort of mix of horror and comedy, you don't really get any of that in this one.
It's just pure horror.
And it's a very sort of stylized horror. It's like they went through the first Evil Dead and tried to clean up some of the hokiness, which led it to being unintentionally funny.
Right.
And there are a couple effective jump scares, but if you've seen any of the Evil Dead or Army of Darkness, I can't say it works as a straight up horror film because there are so many callbacks to movies that are funny.
Mm.
So there's like that constant, you know, like you're constantly able to like burst the suspension of disbelief because of the fan service.
Right.
You know? But like I had a friend who took, you know, his daughters there because they love horror films.
Right.
Are they going to be bothered by this? Because they didn't see the originals. Are they
just going to like
the movie?
If you haven't seen the originals, then I think there's potential for it to be a pretty intense film. You know, it's hard to say because I've seen Evil Dead 2 maybe more times than any other film outside of Jurassic Park. And when you're even getting into the sound design and they're doing an amazing job of pulling sound effects and voice files from those films to use in this new film,
they're
constant distractions from the tension that the film is trying to accomplish. And that's not necessarily bad because I'm enjoying some of these callbacks and I'm enjoying a few of these jump scares, but I think it makes the film less effective for people who are diehard fans of the Evil Dead series.
Well, that's the fine line that they surf, because if they don't do any fan service, then someone's going to bitch that there's,
but it's little things like the first time they come across the cabin, they mix in the Evil Dead 2 join us voice.
Mm.
You know, that deep rumbling join us voice is mixed into the sort of ambient noise of the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that that's the exact sound file pulled from Evil Dead 2 is a distraction. You know, like if it had been some other, or maybe something a little bit more subtle, or just maybe the wind sort of resembles human speech or a chorusing effect or something like that, is still a way to sort of pay homage to how those scenes were constructed in the Evil Dead films without it being such a glaring callback, you know? And so you have a few of those moments where something is supposed to be really upsetting or really dark or really gory, but you're sort of also in your head constantly comparing it to the movies that you already know. You know, it's like when someone does a bad impersonation of an actor, you know, like you're going to compare it to what that actor really did. You know, all the bad Al Pacinos that you've ever heard in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little like that. That being said, I still enjoyed watching the movie. And I think it would be a good group film. Like go have a couple beers with fans of Evil Dead and then go see Evil Dead.
Right.
That could be a lot of fun. As to whether or not it's a super effective horror film is really hard for me to say because I'm way too close to the Evil Dead films.
I think I'd still rather go see Evil Dead the musical.
That's going the opposite direction there.
Yeah, I know.
Or Evil Dead 2 on the big screen. I've never seen Evil Dead 2 on the big screen.
I can't believe they haven't done screenings of it in L.A.
You know?
I would be there in a heartbeat.
Yeah, like I'm Beverly.
I'd be all over. I've seen the first Evil Dead, and I've seen Army of Darkness. I've never seen Evil Dead 2 on a movie screen.
That's strange. All right, so scientists find the key to aging process in the hypothalamus. Scientists have found a biological command center for the aging process in a lump of brain the size of a nut. The U.S. team identified the mechanism in the hypothalamus, which sits deep inside the brain, and showed that they could tweak it to shorten or lengthen the lives of animals. In a series of experiments, the researchers found they could extend the lives of mice by a fifth without the animals suffering from muscle weakness, bone loss, or memory problems common in old age.
But why don't they just do it two-fifths and give me the muscle shit that I'm going to lose anyway when I'm 150?
Well, here you go. Writing in the journal Nature, the scientists describe how their research led them to what appears to be the body's control center for aging. They found that a chemical called NF-KB became more active in the hypothalamus of mice as they got older. When the researchers blocked the substance, mice lived up to 1,100 days compared with 600 to 1,100 days for normal healthy mice. When they boosted NFKB in mice, they all died within 900 days.
Oh, crap.
So, yeah.
Huh.
So,
wow.
Yeah, fascinating.
I just saw a sign driving, I think it was a life insurance sign, but that it said, people who will live to be 150 years of age are being born today. And it really made me think. I was like, you're right. You know, like the kids that are being born right now are going to be living to be 150 years old.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
But what quality of life and where, you know,
right.
On what type of planet?
Yeah. See, I call bullshit on this because I've been eating human hypothalamus for years and I am just aging alarmingly fast at this point.
Hmm. Well, maybe you're eating too much.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you just,
okay. Well, how are you preparing it? Because I don't think you're supposed to saute it for very long.
Shit, it's the coconut oil.
It is.
Oh, see? Oh, okay. You need to serve that up al dente.
Yeah.
I have another medical story.
Okay.
Scientists have invented an oxygen particle that, if injected, allows you to live without breathing for up to 30 minutes.
That's badass.
Yeah, this is pretty badass. A team of scientists at Boston Children's Hospital have invented what is being considered as one of the greatest medical breakthroughs in recent years. So essentially, it's this drug that you can inject in the bloodstream, and it will oxygenate your blood to normal levels up to 30 minutes and literally not involving the lungs at all. So if you have a blockage or you have pneumonia and your lungs have filled up with fluid and they have to get it out, instead of you just dying or becoming, you know, brain impaired, they can inject this oxygen particle into your blood, and for 30 minutes your brain will be oxygenated while they're trying to figure it out what the problem is.
That's fascinating.
It's freaking amazing.
That's awesome.
I wonder if you can use it while diving.
Yeah, man, why not?
Use it recreationally.
I
could be Aquaman.
It's going to be weird the moment that you have to
if I eat enough hypothalamus, will I be able to control fish?
Yeah.
It would be cool that if you could take it and function normally. I think you would probably have a panic attack because your body trying
It'd
to
be
breathe.
Like that scene in The Abyss where they're
it's totally Ed Harris. Breathe normally. Mm-hmm. You breathe liquid for 9 months of your life, you'll be fine.
Well, and that liquid actually exists too. The difference between there is that still using your lungs, but I think your body would be in an absolute terror panic if for some reason you dived underwater and you just held your breath. Or maybe that feeling wouldn't show up. Maybe if you held your breath, that desperation wouldn't happen because you would be getting oxygen. You just felt like you were holding your breath for a long time.
I wonder what that does to the rest of the organs, though. Like when the body isn't focused on delivering, like what the cardiovascular system is supposed to do, and your brain is still remaining oxygenated. There's this, I can't remember what it's called. There's this documentary on Netflix about what death is, you know, like how scientists can't even agree on what the definition of death is.
Right.
They were talking about how one of the challenges they had in bringing people back from severe like cardiac situations, they would be doing fine. But once the death process had started, that injecting oxygen into the system, like high quantities of oxygen, actually exacerbated.
You were doing more harm reviving them than actually leaving them in their kind of state.
Right.
This actually, you're not injecting this into the brain. You're actually injecting it into the bloodstream. So it's supposed to be oxygenating the body.
But then doesn't that mean that you have to have a working cardiovascular system?
Well, your blood's still pumping and everything.
Not without your heart, it's not.
Well, I'm not saying your heart's still going. It's just your lungs. Your lungs are not working. Your heart's still doing the work.
I was assuming a much more disastrous situation.
Yeah. Now, if your heart shut down, I think you're probably fucked.
You're probably dead then.
That's another invention.
You need the heart particle for that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think that's pretty amazing.
All right. And last thing, I find this scientific experiment utterly fascinating. There's this thing called the pitch drop. Have you guys heard about this?
I've just heard this, like, and I do know.
I've heard the phrase. I'm blanking though.
The pitch drop is this Australian experiment.
Basically, the old where they've been staring at the piece of pitch for 200 years.
Yeah, well, 1927. Yeah, for those who don't know what it is, 1927, a professor brings out a pitch. You know, the black sticky substance, and he basically sets it out.
Well, it's not even sticky. It's literally like a hard ball. It looks like a marble.
Right, but it does drip, but incredibly, incredibly slowly. And so he brought it out to
prove
show,
it was a liquid, yeah.
Well, no. To basically show that here is the full extent of time and the shortest expanse of time. You know, we have this pitch, which is actually moving so slow that we cannot perceive it. But in a second, if there was a drop of this that fell off, it would exist. It would drop off faster than we could perceive it. So it exists at the extent of the human perception of time. And so that's why he did this scientific experiment. And he was just using it as an example in class, but he didn't realize how, pardon, sticky everybody would come to appreciate this experiment. There have been 8 pitch drops, only 8 since 1927, and they've all been missed. nobody has seen one yet. They've all had their back turned. There's this guy named John Mainstone. This is why I heard about this. It just cracks me up. He's been running the experiment since 1960, and he keeps on missing it.
He even has cameras pointed at it.
He literally had cameras pointing at it, and they all failed when the pitch dropped and then came back on. I mean, he had
one camera the last time, and the camera failed.
Yeah, so now he's got 5, I think, or 3. I'm not sure which. But it's fascinating. And so you should go check it out because the pitch drop is about to go.
There is a really good radio lab that talks about this too as well.
Fascinating. Although I feel we should talk about Radio Lab because I feel like they're dropping the ball lately. So.
Just because they haven't content coming out? Or
yeah, no, I don't like what they're doing with their show. I feel like their show is becoming a little bit more like This American Life.
I agree. I wish they went back to their big idea topics where they put more science into it, like sleep and death.
I feel like we're doing human interest stories lately, and I'm like,
I mean, they've always slipped one of those in with the other stories, but you're right. I feel like they need to get back to the more science stuff as well.
Right.
I agree. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Anybody else want to talk about anything before we hit the topic?
Well, because I'm a gearhead, I just wanted to bring this up, and especially with you guys here. So IDC put out numbers today on tablet sales.
Mm-hmm.
And how Android, for the first time, has surpassed Apple in tablet sales.
Yeah, they beat them on the iPhone on the phones as well, right?
Well, phones happened a little while ago, like in terms of quarter to quarter sales, where Android has sort of unseated Apple. They've been doing that for a couple quarters now, but this is the first quarter where Android has unseated Apple. And the only reason why I want to bring it up, because you're also talking about every single company that makes an Android tablet, including the Nook, which isn't really an Android tablet, the Kindle Fire, which isn't really an Android tablet. But I'm getting really sick of the IDC because they keep putting out these predictions on like, oh, well, you know, Microsoft is only going to have, you know, 7% of the market, you know, by the end of 2016. So last year, according to the IDC, it was going to take Android until 2015 to unseat Apple.
Right.
The beginning of this year, they said, oh, well, it's possible that by the end of this year, Android tablets will outsell iOS tablets. And even allowing for the fact that they changed their estimate, they were still 6 months off.
Right.
For when it actually happened. And it's like, so many companies are building these like predictions building, you know, strategies on these predictions, and they're all useless.
Well, not only that, it's they're useless numbers too. Like even talking about it is a little strange because first of all, when people say unseating, for one thing, is, you know, some of these phones and tablets are such, they're throwaway devices. You know, I think Android was talking about that they get like a 500,000 activations a day or something crazy like that. But Android is on all these throwaway phones, and just turning them on is an activation, and they're selling them in like India. They're giving away for free. And so, yeah, these numbers are popping up all over the place. But none of those customers are people who spend good money on apps and cases and all that other shit.
Well, and where, this is also where the conversation between like individual devices like iPhone to Samsung Galaxy S3 or iOS to Android, you know, like you kind of have to clarify. Like when you start talking about computing devices in India, I think Apple has a real problem because
they're not there.
They're not there. And your kids are growing up with their primary computing devices being these little ARM Linux devices. And that's also eating Microsoft.
Right.
You know, so like the two of the biggest tech corporations that we understand controlling the traditional PC and computing market are being completely left behind by low power Linux based phones. You know, you can look at a company like Huawei with their Ascend. You know, it's a 6-inch phone. Right. That's a ridiculous phone, but that's probably going to be that person's only computing device.
Mm. But that's so also okay for 99% of the people out there.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. What I'm saying is it's a bad thing for a company that's trying to sell a Premiere experience right now. Underestimating aspects of the world market in which those numbers become more important for software developers that are local.
Very true.
I guess so. It's weird that I don't know if we've always done this, but in the age of the internet, everything seems to be kind of a race and a war. You know, PlayStation and Xboxes and operating systems, and it's almost kind of bizarrely
it's completely dogmatic, but we've always done that. Look at Canon and Nikon, look at Chevy and Ford.
Okay, you're right.
Mercedes and BMW.
That's true.
We define ourselves by these things that we use, and it's not always a rational decision. Like, you could be a Canon shooter and Nikon could come out with some fantastic gear and you're still going to slam it because you've invested not only your money but your personality
right
into what camera.
I just feel like the media really loves this stuff.
That's my big problem right now.
And the fact that
corporations that are using these analyst predictions.
Yeah.
It's not even the information, like the real numbers. It's the IDC saying, oh, well, Android's not going to be competitive for 3 years, and then 2.5 years later they're outselling.
But it's also
the iPad.
Especially with Apple. It's a dogma thing because part of the branding of Apple was about the personality that Apple defined, be different, that it becomes a lot easier to sort of frame that emotional argument in a press release, you know? So when you're talking about these large competitive things between PC and Apple, it's just it's easier to frame the argument.
And I think that's great. It's actually a lot of fun for me on a personal level. But I'm starting to watch companies making investment and purchasing strategy decisions based off of the same dogmatic notion. And that's
but they're horrible. these are big boys and girls. They know they should not be doing that. It's absolutely absurd.
They shouldn't be, but they
anybody can tell you that type of stuff is absurd. And you know, the media doesn't want to report something like they don't want to report, hey, Apple just released their numbers and it's flat this year because they haven't announced their next product in a couple months. They don't want to do that. What they want to say is Apple is doomed. Their numbers are down. Right. This is it. This is the beginning
of
the end.
Sell your stuff.
Yeah, and they can't just say, oh yeah, they haven't released a new product yet. That's why their numbers by the way, stock numbers. They still made a fuck ton of money.
and I'm not a big Apple fan, but that has consistently been one of my least favorite aspects of the narrative, is this notion that the most profitable company on the planet is somehow not cool enough for the stock market right now.
Right. And it's doomed.
Maybe one of the most ridiculous
right.
things.
Yeah, the company's exactly. doomed right now because the stock market went down, you know.
Now Juan, you do or you don't have kids?
Oh, I don't have kids. I have kids. That's enough for right
okay.
now.
Right. Well, okay. I bought Apple when I had kids because I could no longer use because my PC is a child that requires constant monitoring. Okay, if I'm looking at these Samsung numbers now on the phones and stuff like that, would you say that the most recent Samsung is a better phone than the Apple?
You know, it's really hard to say because the iPhone 5 is now last generation.
Right.
You know, so I would say, you know, especially for those people who might be considering a platform switch, like if you're thinking of going from Android to iOS or from iOS to Android, you really want to wait and see what Apple's response to the HTC One and the Galaxy S4 is going to look like. It's not fair to compare because I have the HTC One right now and I'm getting the Galaxy S4 tomorrow.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's not fair to compare the HTC One to the iPhone 5.
Really? Why not? Well, by the way, Juan gets free tech.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're brand spanking new.
Right. You're comparing two completely different generations of device.
Right.
And so, you know, it's nuts how fast this stuff accelerates now. And I think it's maybe one of Apple's biggest problems is they don't really compete against anyone else. You know, HTC has to fight Samsung, who has to fight LG, who has to fight Motorola. There's only one company that makes iOS. And so their ecosystem is just not going to evolve as quickly because it's just not as cutthroat.
But here's the deal, and I am an Apple fan. This is the time, though, that Apple needs to show something because this is the first time in which people are literally saying, these phones are better. It's really kind of the first time. And Apple has the oldest operating system now in a smartphone. And it's yep. looking old. When I look at my little icons that are frozen solid and they're not telling me any information and I'm getting my messages, whatever those pop-ups are.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, like the app situation isn't very pretty for them right now. But when you handle a Windows phone, Microsoft's newest operating system for smartphones and tablets is very compelling.
Yeah,
it looks very pretty experience.
I love the fact that they have those interactive tiles.
The tiles are fantastic.
You don't have to open up the app even to get some of the information.
And they're cleaner than widgets, which I think can be a problem on Android.
I love the fact that Android has Google Now. I wish I had something like that. Uh-huh. I think that's...
Oh, you do?
Not really.
Google Now's on iOS now. It was just released a couple days
ago. But it doesn't do everything that...
Well, that's going to be a problem because of the way that Apple prevents you from integrating...
Yeah, they're too close.
...at the system level.
They're too close.
I don't think that's going to change. I think what we'll see is an iPhone 5S, probably with another minor hardware bump. Maybe we'll see the addition of something like NFC for Passbook. But I'm really hoping that we see a top to bottom cleanup on the software.
They will definitely be behind if they don't address all the new stuff that's coming out. I mean, hell, even the new Facebook that I have has a messaging system that I think is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
These little bubbles pop up in the side and I can still read Facebook and message at the same time if I want to,
right.
instead of going to another app.
But that's going to be a fundamental architectural change for iOS, and I'm not sure that they have the wherewithal to execute it.
They're going to have to. They're going to have to at some point.
We know they're going to have to make that switch. I don't know that it comes with the next version of iOS. I think they'll probably work on what the prettier UI elements are going to look like. Maybe work a little bit more towards better integration with apps, but I seriously doubt we'll see the flexibility that you have with file management and with app management like we do on Android.
This is a great segue into what we're talking about as a main topic, though.
Yes. So you think Johnny Ives is going to show us now that he's in control?
I'm so stoked to see what he can do because I'm really tired of how tired the skeuomorphic nonsense is in iOS. And if they rip off just some of the cleaner, sharper, more modern look of Windows Phone,
right,
I'll be really stoked for Apple fans. I think it's such pretty design not to be inspired by.
I agree.
A cleaner look.
I totally agree. All right. Mm. So can we go from tech to tech here to our topic?
I think we should go from tech to tech.
Yeah, let's do it.
Technology. So
the topic.
Juan and I had this conversation. I went over to where Juan works, and we had this conversation about Google Glass and sort of where that was going, and how this is with technology. What's the rule, Juan, where it multiplies every 6 months or something like that?
Oh, Moore's Law. Well, I think 18? Moore's Law started as a year, but Intel switched it to 18 months is the amount of time it takes for transistors to double.
So now we're having technology just get smaller and smaller and better and better. And this conversation that we had sort of segued into RFID chips and how do people cyber their bodies. And it just was such an interesting conversation that I thought we should let our Geeks On listeners in on it, because Juan is a complete advocate for cybering the hell out of his body.
Oh, sign me up.
And I'm not there yet. So
Matt's going meatball.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's like interesting. It's like whenever I used to play the Cyberpunk video game, or excuse me, the RPG, I always used to, I'd want all the powers of the cybernetics, but I'd want it to still be organic. So
that's called a superhero, Matt.
Yeah, it's true.
he just wants magic.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm judging you, but no, it's fine.
Well, they did do the kidney. They just built, bioengineered a kidney.
Well, I think that's going to be very telling in the future of our technology is how much we dictate what the course of our evolution is going to be.
Right. Well, okay, let's start.
What is cybernetics? I mean, how involved are cybernetics? What defines it? You know, when somebody loses a leg and they have these the blades attached, is that cybernetics?
Right.
Well, I think we're talking about sort of body augmentation or biological augmentation to a certain degree.
The straight definition is the science of communications and automatic control systems in both machines and living things. So
the blades wouldn't really count, although there are feet that do move.
Communicate.
Yeah, communicate.
Yeah. And they're the new ones that now have microchips that allow that stabilize themselves to allow your balance to be better. Like what is it, Blade Runner, the guy who shot his wife?
Oh, right.
Yeah. He had those high tech legs that were.
Well, and we're working on maybe the second generation of prosthetic arms that can communicate directly with the biology of the person who lost a limb and can communicate information back. Like, this is something hot. Don't touch that.
Right.
All
right.
Well, so let's start first, Matt. You would not turn down cybernetics if it was medically needed for you to live a normal life, would you?
No. Actually, here's what was fascinating was this conversation, and why I started talking to Juan about this was out in the lobby. I was talking to a guy, and he was one of the voiceover dudes. But I said, what's that thing hanging out of your ear? Because I couldn't see anything there really a second before, and he said, oh, it's a hearing aid. And when he put it in, it was completely invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird to me that, you know, that we would have a voiceover actor who would be deaf. And I asked him how bad he was, and he's like, I'm deaf. And he was like, he pulled this thing that looked like a lanyard out of his shirt, and he goes, this communicates with my hearing aids and communicates with my phone. So when somebody calls me up, it dials directly into my lanyard. I just basically touch it, and it goes straight into my hearing aids. And he goes, basically, he can crank up sound so he can hear across the room. He can hear whispers. He can crank down things so that he can concentrate. He can stream music directly into his head.
So he's like,
can do all of the,
he's like,
so
a more
he
advanced
there.
Jamie. He's like Jamie Summers with like an iPod attached.
Right. And he was exactly. And so he
got how many songs Jamie Summers can store?
Well, and she has auxiliary imports too. If you ever just need to, you know, throw some RCA cables into the side of her face.
Right. I mean, it was hilarious because it was funny. We were talking about him, and when we started the conversation, we were kind of like, "Oh, you're a voiceover artist who's deaf." And when we finished the conversation, literally one of the other guys went, "I'm actually jealous of you right now."
Right.
Well, see, that's the interesting thing is that where, you know, they solve the problem of hearing with that. The technology we're at now is, well, okay, so we, you know, why don't we throw in some iPod functionality? And he goes, okay. And then the next year it's like, hey, why don't we Bluetooth that to your phone? Oh, okay. Hey, you know what? Why don't we Bluetooth that? I mean, we go from, you know, we're trying to get back to normal to let's goose it a little bit.
Right. Let's go back to Star Trek The Next Generation. I mean, the first thing you do as soon as you have the thing you can plug into your eyes is see outside the human range of spectrum. Why not?
But in a way, a lot of the things that they've added
there already.
To this hearing aid, though, are things that just get you back to normal. Like being able to Bluetooth, you know, like connect it to your phone and be able to answer a phone call is difficult with the older style, you know, cochlear implants that people had to use.
But
so
no, it
now,
isn't.
This gets you back to that sense of normalcy where it connects to your phone in just the same way that my Plantronics Bluetooth headphones connect.
But being able to zoom your hearing in across the room like that is a little bit beyond.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a little extreme, but I still have access to the same kind of equipment too. You know, I could walk around with a Zoom H4n and have that plugged into my phone and be able to directionally augment my own hearing for probably a lot less than what this guy spent on a hearing aid.
Yeah, he was spending 10 grand each year. So
yeah, but I mean, it is a little bit different because let's say you take that technology to one, like 5 years in the future, 10 years in the future, where instead of a hearing aid, they surgically put it in there. Now, would you say that's the same as normal, that he's receiving phone calls within his ear?
Well, but many of the solutions for something like audio for being able to hear are surgical. Like a cochlear implant does, they bore a hole into your head to get that installed.
Right. So if you were able to listen to or stream stuff from the internet in your brain, I would say that was beyond normal.
Well, but I think it depends on to what degree socially we start changing ourselves. You know, like to get something to stream.
Do you think cybernetics is associated with stigma?
Oh, I think it can be, but I also think there's a convenience factor as well. Like you're talking about streaming something in my head, I have a solution for that with bone conduction technology. So because I have functional ears. And I don't want to put earbuds in my ears.
No,
there is another solution for me to be able to achieve very similar.
But what I'm talking about is you being able to stream Google Translate into your ears. So while somebody's speaking to you in a different language, you're getting the translation, and that person not even knowing that you can understand. To me, that's not just fixing the eardrum in your ear. That's something different.
All right, but you can do that with bone conduction. So you've got like these sensors that just vibrate the bones in your skull, and your ears are totally not blocked. So I can hear what the person is saying in their language, and bone conduction is also adding another audio feed into my skull to do that translation on the fly.
So you're saying it's already here.
Already exists. But because I have functional ears, I can get away with bone conduction to augment my hearing. Whereas someone who's deaf probably needs something like a cochlear implant or something else, like these specific hearing aids that we've been talking about.
Well, that's like saying that it's the same thing as somebody being able to hold up a pair of binoculars to their eyes is the same thing as putting binocular vision in your eyeballs.
Well, but that's why I was saying that part of it might just be convenience. Like if I don't have to go get a surgical procedure done and I can augment my hearing on the fly whenever I want and then disable it whenever I want, and it's not permanently built into me, then that's something where I'm weighing the pros and cons of having a surgery to augment my hearing versus someone who genuinely does need to.
All right, so would you do it?
But don't you think that's a cultural shift?
I think it is over time.
I mean, I wonder whether or not it's, you know, like my kids are going to come to me at this some point and go, hey, Dad, I really want to get this implant. And it's going to be like, no, you can't freaking get an implant. Yeah. And that's going to be, you know, I don't care if Sharon's putting things in her face. That's not okay.
Here's the reason why.
You have a perfectly good face.
I already see plenty of teenagers that already seem to have their phones attached to their hands already.
Yeah.
Here's one of the reasons why I don't think it will happen as fast as you think. For the same reason that when I went to go buy my car and I refused to get the mapping system and all that stuff in my car, because I knew in 3 years it was going to be out of date.
Totally.
I don't want somebody mucking around with my eyes and my ears and putting shit in there when I know that, you know, Android, you know, that
as soon as Google's... you walk out of the surgeon's office, the Mark III is out.
Right. And I'm going to go, God, are you serious? And that's a big problem. You don't want to be out of date all the time.
Well, I think
until you can make it outpatient surgery in 20 minutes.
Well, or where, because I see what I'll see happen first is, because this stuff has to be evolutionary. It's not going to be revolutionary in that.
Yeah.
We're already dealing with the fact that we're cyborgs, but our cyborg pieces are very far away from us.
Okay.
So all of us Google walk around Glass. With smartphones and tablets and computers and communications devices. I think the sixth sense is data. You know, when you deprive someone from data, you don't let them have data anymore. There's sort of a detox that has to happen. People get very uncomfortable when they can't, you know, augment their ability to look up information and communicate. And so
that's very true.
Yeah. I mentioned this before. There's a concept of extelligence where extelligence is the way a civilization contains its knowledge. Mm-hmm. And as its capacity for extelligence increases, the necessity of intelligence decreases. So what we're seeing with this constant access to our extelligence, do you really need to know all this constant information that we used to just carry around with us all the time?
And I love listening to mathematicians talk about stuff like, why would I memorize something that I have constant access to? You know,
actually,
why would
there's I a really something that I reference? There's a really fantastic TED talk with Ken Jennings, the guy who won Jeopardy so many times. And he's talking about, you know, getting beaten by Watson on Jeopardy, this thing that was his one thing, the thing that made him really, you know, human, was that no computer could come up with 20 million useless facts in a row and release them, you know, release them at command to a very difficult question, a very parsed, uncomfortable question. And the fact that Watson beat him so handily really put him into this blue funk about wondering whether or not we would need people like him, or whether or not people would evolve away from having information at their fingertips because we have so much information in other places.
Well, trust me, we don't need the guy at the party who freaking knows everything. So we don't
I think we'll eventually all be that guy, though, because I think what we'll start to see is, you know, we see it with concepts with wearable computing, with smartwatches, with Google Glass and services like that, where there seems to be we're sort of over the smartphone. It's about as good conceptually as it can get. It's a slab of glass and it shows you things. Mm-hmm. And now we need to start making that access to information more intimate to the way our natural senses work.
I'm interested with what Google Glass does right now. Since it got hacked today.
No kidding. Well, and not only that, they just built in a lock screen too. So that was very exciting for Google Glass. But I think with each successive generation of information acquisition, it's going to be a shorter time frame for people to get acclimated to. So once everybody's sort of wearing glass and goggle-like solutions and they're gaming on Oculus Rift and stuff like that, then the next one of moving that information even closer to maybe like contact lenses or some sort of laser solution is going to happen even faster. And once that happens and that's a little more pervasive, the idea of building in biological controls is going to happen even faster after that. And I think once we start augmenting to that degree, and once we've studied the biology behind our interaction with light and information and sound, that's where we're really on that whole sort of Kurzweil like singularity path, where we're dictating the future course of our evolution at the same time as we're building machines that are becoming harder and harder to distinguish from the biology that they're there to support.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. That's really fantastic. So which senses would you currently want, would you, or anybody really want to feel this, would you currently augment?
I want new senses. I want magnetism, and I want like a built-in compass.
Oh, you're going straight for dolphin. All right. Okay.
No, I mean, like, I just think it's so cool. I was telling Matt about this when we were having our chat. I got to play with someone who had built a prototype compass belt, and it was amazing.
So you could feel north?
Where north was. It was just a subtle little pulse as long as the battery had power in the belt. And so no matter where you turned, it would subtly pulse where north was. And it was incredible. And especially sort of navigating around like Burbank, where it's all sort of flat and the same, you just had this innate bird-like sense of what direction you were traveling in. And it was just something so simple and yet had a profound impact on. So now I keep compasses in all my cars, but it's not the same. I want to just be able to innately feel where north is. And so you hear about people who build magnets into their fingertips and you're like, I want that.
I guess knowing direction, absolute direction would be a nifty new sense, I guess. I guess that's something I don't feel like I need. I do like the fact that when my phone is in my pocket and I have the buzzer on, when I get an email or something, it just does one little tap to my leg. And I wish that would move, as far as a sense, that would move from a tap to the leg to an intuition. Although maybe that would drive me freaking nuts. I'm not sure. If I was constantly getting an intuition that I got delivered something, that, who knows? It might be awful. But there is something interesting about knowing when like somebody has messaged me. And it does feel like a sixth sense. Like it really is just a little tap on the leg, and then I know that I got an email.
Oh my God, that would drive me insane. Mom is calling me. Oh God.
Or it's like the first thing I would do is disable Twitter. You know, like, no, that's way too much.
Well, maybe you could load your own sensation tones. So the feeling you get is like a ringtone. So you might go, your mother would call you. Maybe you would ignore it.
Well, there are
your lover calls you. You get horny.
There you are.
But there are interesting things, because what you're talking about, like when it comes to haptics, like for example, a couple different phones have done this now, where I'll make a voice call using a headset, so I don't actually have the phone out in front of me. And when the call connects, there's a subtle pulse to let you know that you're on.
Right.
And it's great, because like I'll be talking to someone else and I'll feel that little vibration in my pocket, and then all of a sudden I know, oh, I'm on the call.
Right.
You know, and it's so crazy to what degree we've also started shaping our behavior around these devices, that it only sort of makes sense that we eventually just need to incorporate them into ourselves.
Hmm. So
it's interesting you guys focus outwards so much. Like I definitely would want to be focused more inwards, like complete biochemical control and awareness of my own body.
But do you? So much of your brain is already dedicated to that.
No, that's complete on auto control, and my body really sucks at it. So,
so you're saying if you had a whole bunch of sliders and you could say, "Hey, I want to turn up my metabolism today," you could just slide the slider up.
I would never have to do cardio again. I could just set my body to do it for me.
Well, that's what's fascinating. I went and I looked up all the different senses, and you know, beyond the common ones that we know, sight, hearing, taste, smell, touch, the sentences that are ascribed to human beings that we sometimes make into background noise of balance and acceleration and temperature and kinesthetic sense and pain and time are things which we ignore. And it'd be really, really fascinating at how we could augment those alternate senses, which are background noise. Like we have human eyes. Just, I mean, if you stare at one object for very long, if you have really, really strong focus, human eyes have this law of impermanence where we'll suddenly start to fade out everything else but this one spot that we're staring at. Mm-hmm. And it'd be interesting to actually to take our vision or augment it so that impermanence isn't happening, or make our balance more acute so that you were aware that your balance was shifting.
I think maybe that's the type of stuff that, though, you know, I think you might be messing with Mother Nature, that, you know, it, you might be surprised that those are the things that make you work correctly. Like, you know, being able to focus on something allows you to see, because if you actually paid 100% attention to the field of vision, that it might just be overwhelming and a cluttery mess.
Interesting.
And the same thing happens with audio as well. You'll start to tune out background noise, but if someone calls your name out, that becomes an important piece of information that has to cut through.
Or your specific baby crying in a crowd, you can pick out of a crowd because, you know, you're attuned that way. If you had set your, if you went internally and screwed with the dials, you might be surprised of how messed up your life might get.
There's some theories that autism is like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
In how you relate, especially with the world around you and what you can filter and what you can't. Just to go back to your I'm sorry, I completely forgot who was saying it. The being able to control your metabolism and stuff like that.
Oh, Don.
So I don't disagree with you, but having met people with autoimmune diseases, having met people with type 1 diabetes, where that management becomes necessary, I have to wonder how well we would do with being able to directly
dial it up and dial it down.
Well, I mean, with like every aspect of our biochemical makeup, you know,
maybe it's in a situation
where your body, for example, is not releasing that insulin anymore, you know, and refusing to, then if you have control, and maybe you would be better at it, you know?
Maybe it's in just a hidden folder so that noobs couldn't get to it. But if you went to the, you opened up terminal and you did ls-a or whatever, it would open up the folder.
And then you could get in there. Ooh, echolocation's in here too.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Who knew?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's in beta still. This sucks.
Yeah, that must have been an update. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, and I think with all of these things, we have to assume that there's a certain degree of autopilot involved as well. You know, you can't assume that the entire system shuts down until you start pressing all of the buttons.
It's actually a fantastic thing to go back to our point on direction sense, where certain of these things can actually be built in childhood. There's this culture that I was reading about that basically their language incorporates in everything that they say where they are in space. So you would never say like, hi, hello. It would be, hello, good to see you that you're standing northeast of me. Mm. You know, and all of the people in this culture, the culture has what's called cardinal direction. Every kid who's in this culture can always point due north, you know, no matter where they are. And they find people who can't, sort of like the stupid kid on the block. It's really like, oh, hey, you know, it's really nice that you guys ride the short bus.
I dare to throw one of them in the Beverly Hills Mall and try to point to north.
But
But
it was funny because this woman learned their language. I mean, that she was actually not studying it to learn cardinal direction, but was doing it to learn their language. And after speaking their language for 6 months, she was walking on the beach and suddenly had this sense of herself and a bird's eye view above herself, and literally was seeing herself in the map like a dot on a map in a video game that you would see on a small HUD. And she went back and talked to her host family about it, and they were how else would you do it? And that blew me away. Absolutely blew me away that these are things that you could teach.
Well, I would like to bring up something because all of this cybernetic implants and stuff that you guys have been talking about has all been taking and inputting into you. But I think it would be interesting to unleash the stuff that your brain has been recording and going the other direction. Like, I think it'd be great to have some type of cybernetic that would actually be able to recall like visions and smells or whatever I want to on the fly, or names, or just unlock the things that I already have shut down somewhere in this stupid
a total recall chip.
No, I think that's just a bad idea.
As opposed to Wikipedia trying to feed all that crap into your brain.
Immediately, all I could think of was, you know, no, what you said was that you were coming home at 6 o'clock.
But
no, I didn't. That's not what I said.
You wouldn't have to say.
Oh, really?
That.
Shall we go to the tape?
You wouldn't have to say that because they would already have reviewed their own tape. And known not to have made that argument.
I just don't want to remember coming out the birth canal.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. There's just so much, you know, to be unlocked that it seems like, at least in my brain, it will never be recalled again, which is a shame because I can't remember shit anymore.
Yeah, so, but I also think that that's just interesting the way that we're sort of geared in terms of how bombarded with information we are on a constant basis, where there's no incentive to remember anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so it's the same thing I was talking about with like your smartphone moving to Google Glass, moving to like contacts or something that's just an ocular implant. It's all about moving that stuff closer. I mean, mm-hmm. We endeavor to try and do that now. People growing up with social media document everything that they do. Every lunch that they have on Instagram, every hangout that they have on Facebook. And so that information right now is just really far away.
Right.
And so when we can bring that information a little bit closer, start to incorporate it into a device more intimately, I don't see where that kind of, you know, situational recall is that far away. Especially when we start looking at things like predictive algorithms, anticipatory search, services like Watson, Siri, mm-hmm. and Google Now, really picking up on the more contextual and colloquial-based ways that we'll try and look for information. They're just, again, it's like we're already the cyborg. It's just we've got to find a way to build that into a closer way of using it.
Well, also, at what point does the cyborg become really disturbing? At what point do people look at, oh, well, these legs that Oscar Pistorius did maybe made him go faster? Do I chop off my own legs to?
You know, I've been wondering about that too, because especially like you're talking about like runners. You know, there's so many studies done on birds that the length of your shin bone in relation to your size dictates your potential for speed. So why not? Why try and replicate the human foot? Why not try and replicate an ostrich leg?
Right.
You know. It's been shocking to me that we haven't seen someone try and push the boundaries on that kind of,
or even a cat's eye.
Listen, know? I think you're gonna look like a complete nerd just wearing the Google glasses. I think even just getting through that is gonna be difficult. Let alone.
You know, I think it's gonna be a very short term, because I went through being the geek with a smartphone, and before that a PDA, and before that sort of a little data organizer, and those, every time period that tech has improved, the time period from being the total nerd boy to being just a regular member of society has gotten shorter and shorter and shorter.
I think Google Glasses is a stepping stone.
I just don't think there's that much of a social stigma against technology anymore.
If Apple puts out a watch, well, Bluetooth was sort of an abused, you know, sort of social thing, which I think
and also Google Glass is staring at
so,
you.
Aaron, when I was in New Zealand, there was a convention going on where a bunch of people from Google were flown out, and they were wearing Google glasses. Now, in the building, it was admittedly a tech building. People were walking around wearing the glasses. Nobody was saying anything. But they went out into the city wearing the glasses, and people were just stopping them and asking them about them, and there was nothing snickery about it.
No, because
people were just curious.
Yeah, they're curious now because it is. I mean, I would love to try them, and I'm going to wear them, and I'm probably take the heat for it. I think it is a stepping stone because I don't think it's going to be the same thing as a a smartphone which you put in your pocket, and which, by the way, people also now are kind of, you know, people bitch about people with pulling out smartphones and not communicating.
Well, but that's why I think something like Google Glass actually serves to help the social condition. It's by moving that information closer to your eye, there's less likelihood that you're going to be sitting at dinner watching everyone staring down at their crotches.
Yeah, everyone's going to be staring over their left shoulder.
Everybody's just going to look like they have amblyopia. Everybody's going to look like they have amblyopia. You know, where like one eye's askew and the rest of the eye is just looking straight ahead.
But no, seriously, like having gotten to play with Google Glass, it's very subtle. I can be making eye contact with someone and it's a momentary distraction, as opposed to that distraction which shuts down a table full of people when a phone alert goes off and we all stop to look at a glowing rectangle to decide whether or not it was ours or whether or not we need to pick it up.
Right.
And so
I'm excited.
By moving back a little more intimately, I think it actually serves to help some of those situations. And I really think that this generation of sort of tech alert is going to happen much faster than the smartphone adoption rate did.
I just can't agree with you on that one. The social mores don't adjust as quickly as the technology. I can't tell you how often, you know, the complaint I hear across Los Angeles is people sitting there with their freaking Bluetooth headsets on at restaurants and dinners. And it's the utter douchebaggery of it is rampant. And I can easily see people doing that with their Google Glass.
I don't think you can fix bad behavior in technology, but you know, if someone's going to be a douchebag, they're going to be a douchebag with a Bluetooth, with camera, with a smartphone, with Google Glass. They're going to be a douchebag. But for those people that are looking at this in a way where I still want access to data, but I want to have more human interaction, I think Google Glass is a step in the right direction.
There's actually a really fantastic short that's out right now. I cannot remember the name of it, but it shows this guy and he's wearing his glasses and stuff, and he's looking at his beautiful apartment, and then it pulls out of the glass and you realize he just has an apartment that is nothing but white walls.
Great idea.
And all of it is just projected, and he's looking at his side wall that literally has, you know, he's literally having achievements show up on the wall and stuff like that. And he has his date that night, and he's out with this girl, and he starts talking with her in a very normal conversation, and the glasses are just reading her body language. They're reading her vocal patterns. And every time he does it, the glasses are giving him hints to like, try this. And it's all the game stuff. Like, maybe you should change conversation tactic. And he finally gets her back to his apartment. And it's funny because during the conversation, what made it sci-fi was during the conversation, she's like, "Oh, you work for this company?" And he's like, "Yeah, I do work for the company. And you know, I've done it for a while." She's like, "Oh, are there any really secret stuff with it?" And he's like, "No, there's nothing really secret with it." And they head back to his apartment, and she's looking around at his place and going, "Oh, wow, I love what you've done with the place. It's amazing." And then she looks up at his wall and realizes that his achievement board is still up, that he left open by mistake. And all of the dating things that he left up there are right there. Are like, oh, and she was like, "Are you scanning me? Are you recording this?" And it's this real like huge stigma between them. And he's like, no, I'm not. And he's basically losing her on the way out. And as she's right about to walk out the door, he goes, "Computer number 047, stop." And it flashes this light right in her eyes, and she freezes. And he goes, "Reset." And she turns around, and she's like, "Oh, hi." And it's this wonderfully...
She's virtual great, as well.
No. He basically reset her brain. It's this wonderful Twilight Zone moment that there is a secret little back door in the glasses, and you can control people. So it's a great short. If you could find it, it's a wonderful view into this technology that's right around the corner.
Well, and as soon as we can start working alternate, reality augmentation, that's where I think it serves to disrupt a bunch of markets that I don't think people even fully understand yet. Like,
yeah, that's crazy.
It pisses me off to no end that in the year 2013, just to see how fast I'm going in my car, I have to take my eyes off of the road to flick down at a dashboard and then to come back up.
Well, there are
to
cars
see how I'm operating.
There
the
are cars coming out now that
very that few though. It. I mean, you know, we've been working with heads up displays for almost a decade now. I think when Cadillac first started building in night vision and heads up displays. And it still hasn't filtered down to the consumer level at all. And well, you see, and that's doing, like, for me.
They've been doing heads-up displays for 40, 50 years in military and stuff.
Even with even with Tesla, you know, even Tesla, you'd think would have that straight up at the top of their line, and they don't. Yeah.
And so, you know, if an auto manufacturer isn't going to give that to me, I'll go buy something that I wear on my face. You know,
right.
I would rather have that information in an easier way to interact with and a safer way to interact with than wait for an auto manufacturer to think that it's a good idea to give it to consumers.
Well, I'm excited for, I'm not sure if Google Glasses is the thing for me, but I am excited that these companies, I know everybody is trying to figure out how to break out of the little square or rectangle cube that you carry around as your iPhone or your smartphone. That's not the future. And I know everybody's working at it. I'm excited to see what that is. Maybe it is glasses.
But I also think just consumers are ready for it. I mean, look at how excited people are about the idea of an Apple smartwatch.
Yeah,
I think consumers are ready for a new way to interact with things like alerts and text messages and phone calls. I think we're ready. I think we're primed for a transition. What it'll eventually look like, I wouldn't even hazard a guess. And I don't know that Google Glass will be successful. But I think that's all sort of heading in the right direction for us to be able to interact with information more meaningfully in a way that doesn't distract us from interacting with the world around us.
I feel like Google Glass is kind of like the Red camera, in which it's really good. the best thing about it is that it's going to be pushing other companies to try to keep
to do better.
Yeah,
totally. Absolutely.
Like go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, because Google right now has a reputation for being the market disruptor. You know, like no one buys TomToms anymore because of Google Maps, you know, so like companies get nervous when Google starts showing interest in things like, you know, wearable technology, automated cars, fiber optic networks.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm so
even
excited
if they
about that.
Oh, I want fiber so bad.
A Vermont company just came in it's a telecom, and they came out with the same speeds. So
$35 bucks a month. $35. Yeah. And you're telling me that Time Warner can't give me better than 50 megs internet?
Yeah.
Come on.
Time Warner can go F themselves. I'm sick and tired of that company.
The second I have any competition, I'm on Time Warner right now because that's all I have access to.
Yeah, me too.
The second I can get anything freaking else. Frustrating.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, this doesn't really fit in the conversation, but is any of you guys excited about this Oculus Rift? Because every time I look at it, I get more and more excited.
I'm stupid stoked for like the kind of gaming that we were promised like back in the late 90s.
And I think this
is virtual reality.
To me, I don't know if this is happening, but I don't know why Microsoft or PlayStation isn't right now at their front door saying, "Can we announce that Oculus Rift will work for the Xbox 720?"
I'm shocked that Sony hasn't gotten on board. Have you messed with the Sony 3D headset?
No.
Try and see if you can hit like a Sony store or something like that, because it's phenomenal. It's too expensive, but it's really, really
same deal as an Oculus.
Really?
Well, it's a little different than an Oculus. An Oculus is about being sort of immersing you in the gaming or the movie experience. The Sony headset I thought was interesting because their take on it was, you're going to wear this visor and you're going to have these headphones, and it's going to feel like you're the only person in
a
gorgeous
theater.
Movie theater.
I don't need that.
I think it does it really, really well. But Oculus Rift is sort of the next step in getting me involved in the gaming. And I'm shocked that Sony isn't beating down their door to have that
What's
as like an
price
exclusive
point?
On the PS4.
$300.
Yeah.
Listen, I want to play Skyrim where the world around me is like there's no, my peripheral vision's covered. I want to turn my head and look around. I mean, I want to be in Skyrim. I don't want to.
I might actually be good at car games if I had my peripheral vision back.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's perfect for driving games. I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And especially for as many people go through trying to make gaming rigs with like 3 and 5 monitor setups, you know, a $300 piece of wearable tech is going to render all of that obsolete.
And imagine imagine what Microsoft could do with the Kinect and with the Oculus, where you can raise your hands and then you could see your hands in the virtual world. It would be able to track your, you know, right now the Oculus doesn't know your position, but the Kinect could track the Oculus and it would know your position too.
Right.
I mean, you could do some crazy shit with both of those technologies.
Yep.
Anyway, different conversation, I know.
Oh, and then you could throw in like Leap Motion type stuff too, where you can be interacting with different levels or tiers of motion control and motion tracking.
Yeah.
Like that could be really compelling.
Mm. All right. Story for another time.
All righty. All right, guys. Thanks very much for everybody showing up to this Skype phone call.
It's nice.
Thanks for joining us, Juan.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I hope you can join us in future episodes.
Do you have any projects you're currently pushing?
I have one that we can talk about loosely. YourTechReport.com has just wrapped up a deal with Sirius XM Radio, and we are going to be hosting a one-hour tech chat, weekly tech chat show. I can't tell you what channel it's on, and I can't tell you when the start date is, but it's coming very soon. And so we're super excited about that for all of your geeky hardware needs.
Okay, so that's you will be on a current Sirius channel, right? Is that what you're saying? Okay. Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so for Sirius XM subscribers, it's going to be a talk news channel, and we're going to be the weekly tech experts on that. And so we're really excited about that.
Do you guys know the format? Would it be like a call-in type of thing or just hitting big news?
Mostly talking news.
Oh, okay.
It's like a magazine segment.
A little bit more like that. But the nice thing is we've also got the flexibility to produce whatever we want. And so we're already lining up a couple interviews with some movers and shakers in the tech industry. Again, I can't really go into specifics just yet, but in the next couple of weeks, we should be getting our announcements out on yourtechreport.com.
Oh, fantastic. Cool. That's great. Well, when you're allowed to talk about it, come on back and let us know.
I absolutely will pimp this thing wherever someone will let me.
Excellent.
you can use us to pimp your show.
And if you're a geekling out in Geekland and you love Juan, please go to our Facebook page for Geeks On, or go to the Geeks On website at www.geeksOn.com and tell us how much you love Juan and what you'd like to see us talking about in the future.
Yeah, a lot of activities going on Facebook and, all day. So we have a Facebook fan page and a Facebook group page. So
they're actually doing really well.
And I need to get you guys on the Google's Plus, and maybe we can do a video hangout too.
All right.
Yes, I actually have not done a Google Hangout yet.
Oh, it's so much fun! All right, so
we'll on Google Plus.
Actually, it's pretty surprising.
Felicia Day.
Oh God! I think they're all on Google Plus because of Felicia Day. Yes,
probably. I feel like the funny thing is every time I hear like tech media, they're doing a lot of stuff on Google. Like, Google Plus is kind of like the tech news hangout.
Well, and especially for like you hit it on news. I'm also going to be co-hosting a series of podcasts with the guys over at MyFox LA, and they're using Google Plus to start doing news broadcasts and news segments.
Oh, interesting.
So they can start
the thing. Whenever I go over to Google Plus, it's like industry stuff, and celebrities, but I never see people there.
They're still Facebooking. Well, at least the older people.
Well, at least the older people, because the young ones are leaving in droves.
Right.
They're doing it. They're on Twitter.
Just as old fogies.
Yep.
Yeah, boy.
Mm. The times they are changing.
They are changing. All right, everybody. Thanks for showing up tonight, and have a good geek week. And hopefully, we'll get another episode out sooner than later.
Sounds good. Geek it out.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.